These days, it seems that almost all of aspects of our lives are being recorded in some way. I mean, we post pictures of our meals on Instagram and share TikTok videos of significant life events and put together YouTube recordings of our vacations. Police are increasingly relying on Ring doorbell cams and dash cams and bystanders with iPhones to provide evidence in criminal cases. And just this last week, we could watch as two planes nearly collided on the runway at Midway Airport because there's an auto shop right next to the airport that has a security camera recording every single takeoff and landing. It's to the point that if we don't see it on Facebook or Twitter or some other social media, it didn't really happen. And I have to wonder, what would have happened if Peter had had a smartphone in the events that Dave just read to us about from the Gospel of Luke? Now, Peter, of course, is on the mountaintop there with Jesus and James and John. And while they're up there, that this incredible event happens as Jesus undergoes this transformation in his appearance, is what we refer to usually as the transfiguration. He literally begins to shine. His clothes give off this incredibly bright light. And then if that isn't incredible enough, all of a sudden there's Elijah and Moses standing and talking to him. Now, as incredible as these events all are, they're not entirely without precedent in the Bible. You go back to Exodus, you'll find that Moses also goes up on a mountaintop to speak with the Lord, and when he comes down, his face is shining. Moses' presence on the mountaintop here with Jesus, I think, is intended then to show the continuity between the old law of Moses and the new covenant that Jesus brings. Elijah then completes this great trinity of biblical figures. Elijah is the first great prophet of Israel. His appearance here indicates Jesus is the fulfillment also of the work of these prophets. In addition, Elijah's return was widely anticipated as coming, preceding the coming of the Messiah. And so his presence on the mountain confirms Jesus' identity as that Messiah. It's an identity that Peter has confessed just a week before in the verses that lead up to our text for this morning. So this episode where Jesus speaks of these two great figures for the Hebrew past is recorded for us also in Matthew and in Mark, but Luke gives us some interesting details that the others don't mention. Luke, for example, is the only one that tells us anything about what these three great figures are talking about. We read here that they speak of Jesus' departure. Now the word that's used here in Greek, actually, that was translated as departure, that word is exodus. It's the word we usually associate, of course, with the great salvific event in the Old Testament when Moses leads the people of Israel out of slavery in Egypt. And so Luke is connecting that important event of the past with Jesus' own ministry and his departure towards the cross. Jesus is the one to whom all the law and the prophets point. He is the one who completes and surpasses the work begun by Moses and by Elijah and by all those who follow after him. The disciples don't seem to quite grasp all of this, however. They apparently have almost fallen asleep while Jesus is praying, something that would happen again later in the Garden of Gethsemane. And when they're shocked back to their senses, they discover before their eyes this illuminated Jesus conversing with Moses and Elijah, and one can understand why they aren't quite sure what to make of this astonishing scene. But then as Moses and Elijah are preparing to leave, Peter, who never seems to be at a loss of words, blurts out, "Master, it's good that we're here. We should construct three shrines, one for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah." He's not able to take a selfie, of course, so he has to come up with some way to try and preserve this mountaintop moment by erecting some sort of tabernacles where they can all stay for a while. Just in case the reader misses how ridiculous this proposal really is, Luke inserts an editorial comment that Peter didn't know what he was saying. In fact, while he's still speaking, the mountaintop is suddenly then enveloped by a cloud, and the disciples grow fearful. Again, the cloud has a significance in Old Testament history. The cloud is where it is often symbolic of God's presence. It's a pillar of cloud that leads the people of Israel through their time in the wilderness and then settles on the tabernacle whenever they camp. It's a cloud that out of which God speaks to Moses to give the commandments. And when the temple is dedicated in Jerusalem, it also is filled with the cloud of God's presence. And just as God spoke to Moses out of that cloud on Mount Sinai, now also the voice of God speaks out of the cloud on the mountaintop of Transfiguration. It begins, "This is my son, my chosen one." Now that should maybe sound a little bit familiar, because six chapters earlier in Luke, in a passage that we looked at a few weeks ago, almost those same words are used at Jesus' baptism. There the heavenly voice speaks out, "You are my son whom I dearly love." Now there is a subtle but very significant difference in these two addresses. At the baptism, the voice is directly addressing Jesus, affirming his calling, signaling this is the time to begin his public ministry. But now with the transfiguration, the voice is not speaking to Jesus, it's speaking to his disciples. And it's affirming to them that the one who has called them indeed is the Messiah. And it underlines that revelation with a command. It says, "Listen to him." The disciples are not meant to be mere bystanders here on the mountaintop. They don't just happen to be present when this marvelous and unexplainable thing happens to Jesus. The voice is speaking directly to them. And so we see that the transfiguration is taking place for their benefit. Jesus is transformed before their eyes so that they too may experience God's transforming presence in their lives. Moses and Elijah appear not just to encourage Jesus, but to encourage the disciples, encouraging them to be empowered by the same Spirit of God that led them in their ministries. And the voice calling from the cloud is not an assurance to Jesus of the importance of his work, but a confirmation of the disciples about their work. And so given this awesome encounter with God, it's no wonder that Peter wants to preserve this moment. But it's indeed a fleeting moment. For as soon as the voice is finished speaking, the cloud was lifted, Moses and Elijah disappear, and the disciples go down from the mountaintop, and they don't tell anybody anything, rendered speechless by what they've experienced. Now, as you go on then and read about the events of the next day, we see the disciples have not taken to heart what has happened on that mountaintop. For in the second part of our reading, we have this man coming to Jesus asking that his son be healed. It seems the disciples have tried, but they have failed to rid the boy of the demons that possess him. In spite of their transforming experience with God on that mountaintop, they are not prepared to carry on the mission now that they've come down from the mountain. And Jesus is angry. He says to them, "You faithless and crooked generation, how long will I be with you and put up with you?" And our text ends as the disciples fail to grasp what Jesus is trying to tell them about the coming suffering that he must face. In the verses that immediately follow our reading, the situation deteriorates even further as the disciples get into this argument about which one of them is the greatest. This encounter with God does not seem to have had much effect on these disciples. I mean, maybe they think that the experience they had on the mountaintop wasn't really meant for them. It was something that just happened to Jesus. They're sort of like folks doom-scrolling through social media, jumping from one TikTok video to the next without really engaging in any one of them and letting them affect them. But Jesus seems to have some very different expectations. Judging by his angry reaction at their failure to bring about healing, he seems to expect that they will have been transformed by this mountaintop experience. And having been transformed, he expects them then to bring that transformation to the world around them. Having seen the light, they are called to bring the light with them to the darkened world. And I think Jesus has that same expectation for us today. Our encounters with God are not intended to just make us better, more pious people. No, the purpose of our encounters with God is to experience transformation so that we may carry transformation out into the world. To fulfill our mission of transforming a world from one of despair and pain to one of healing and hope. Heidi Newmark is pastor of the aptly named Transfiguration Lutheran Church in South Bronx. And she writes, "Living high up in the rarefied air isn't the point of transfiguration. It was never meant as a private experience of spirituality removed from the public square. It was a vision to carry us down, a glimpse of unimagined possibility at ground level." To put it another way, we're not called up to the mountaintop merely to enjoy the view or to have some new picture that we can put on our cover photo. We're invited to the mountaintop in order to experience transformation and to carry that transformation with us when we come down from the mountaintop to the valley where we live out our calling. Through illuminating encounters with God on the mountain, we are prepared to spread the light even in the valley of shadow. Now, it's a natural reaction to try to save something that seems so good, to try to hang on to wonderful times and preserve them. But like the disciples, we can't always stay there on the mountaintop. We can't just collect all of our experiences and pin them on our Pinterest boards or share them to see how many likes we can get. We are invited to fully experience our encounters with God. I fear that we as a society have become so obsessed with capturing and preserving certain moments of our lives that we fail to take notice of what's really happening around us. We devote so much energy to recording to what we're doing that we don't open our eyes to see what God is doing around us. That's very nearly what Peter did in today's passage. He gets so caught up in trying to hold on to the incredible sights and sounds that he nearly misses their significance. Like tourists who experience the world only through their smartphones, Peter wants to keep the moment from passing and is in danger of passing the moment. As marvelous as it is to encounter Moses and Elijah face to face, as wonderful as it is to see Jesus' clothes shining this brilliant white, as inspirational as it is to hear the voice of God calling down from heaven, perhaps the most miraculous part of this entire event ultimately is simply the presence of Jesus himself. Listen to him, says the voice. Pay attention to him. Don't take the presence of Jesus for granted. And in our media-filled world, it's so easy to lose focus of that. One commentator puts it this way. He says, "The voice dies away, the cloud melts away, the two great Old Testament heroes disappear, but Jesus is still there. He is the one on whom the disciples must keep their focus." You may have seen a video that's gone viral. It was taken on New Year's Eve in Paris a little over a year ago now. There's this big crowd gathered on the Champs-Élysées to witness the countdown and the fireworks, but virtually nobody is actually watching what's going on. They are all standing there with their phones to film it. And as the countdown comes down to zero and the new year arrives, nobody in the crowd reacts. They're all just keeping on filming it. And one commentator on X describes the scene. He says, "No kissing, hugging, dancing, or celebrating. Just thousands of people documenting the same thing to prove they were there, bearing joyless witness." Another one says very simply, "Camera eats first. If it isn't on the gram, you weren't there." To some extent, I think we all fall prey to that sort of phenomenon. We look, but we don't see. We hear, but we don't listen. We record the event, but we fail to grasp its significance. And paradoxically, we're bombarded with so many of these images that ultimately they lose their importance. Sometimes God calls on us to just throw away the smartphones and go live. Rediscover the sacred all around us. Recognize the divine presence in the here and now. Value each moment for what it is, which is a gift from God. Now, the week that lies ahead marks the beginning of the Lenten season. Ash Wednesday is this Wednesday. This is a season of confession, of humility. It's a season of self-reflection, of spiritual discipline. It is a time especially to open ourselves to the presence of God all around us in the mundane and the ordinary moments of our lives. In a few moments, we gather here at the table of the Lord. And as we do so, I invite us to seek God's presence in the familiar but profound act of eating and drinking. In the community of ordinary believers who come together to become the extraordinary body of Christ. In the mundane and yet remarkable task of simply remembering. And having experienced the divine presence here, I invite us then to continue to seek the presence of Christ throughout the Lenten journey that lies before us, a journey that leads ultimately to the cross. It's a natural reaction to try to save something that seems very inspiring and very meaningful, to try to hang on to the good times, to preserve them. But like the disciples, we cannot always stay there on the mountaintop with the great figures of history. But we can, and we are invited to live constantly in the presence of Jesus.